The following announcement may be unfit for younger listeners and may be deemed to be in poor taste to other portions of our audience.
Here comes the Colonel.
I have absolutely no idea why people think that is funny. I mean, it's just not funny. All right, welcome back. The second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In just a minute, we're going to get back to Steve Carr. And also, Dr. Christine Lee is going to check in. She's with NASA. We found her on the first day of the government shutdown at her home in Foggy Bottom. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set for today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Okay, so we threw in the coins, and we have awakened the spirit of the fountain. Okay, oh, spirit of the fountain. Well, ready for today's query, are you? Put on your thinking cap. Well, I guess you don't have a thinking cap. You've got a water cap. All right. Well, what Caribbean country citizens sometimes derisively call it jam dung? What Caribbean country citizens sometimes derisively call their Caribbean country jam dung?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell.
Yeah, you're right. It is. It's the Caribbean country whose citizens call it jam dung? Yes, it is. It's Jamaica. Isn't that amazing? We kind of think Jamaica's kind of romantic, but they call it jam dung. All right. Okay, back to today's guest. Steve Carr, Director of Proteomics at MIT and Harvard. When I mentioned the biases, and then you reminded me, yeah, there's certain egos that are involved in the science community, and actually we run into those all the time, and I can see where they could end up being an impediment. Let's talk about PitCon, though, for just a minute. You're going to make a presentation there, and I know you're going to be so fascinating to the people that get to hear it. What do you want the audience to kind of take away from what you're going to present?
I think I want them to have come away with a reasonably clear understanding of how where proteomics fits in modern biomedical science. Mm-hmm. I want them to understand that this didn't start yesterday, that there's actually quite a long history of the application of mass spectrometry, in particular in biomedical research, and that it has really been over the last decade, really over the last 5-6 years, where the technologies, the mass spectrometers, the chromatography, the way that we approach sample processing, the way we approach data analysis, all of that has now risen to a very high, well-honed performance level, so that, you know, we called this proteomics 10 years ago, but really we were looking at a tiny fraction of the proteome. Today, we actually have methods that routinely and robustly deliver information on more than half of the expressed proteins in any given system that we're studying. So we really are doing the omics part of proteomics today. Very importantly, that information that we provide is very complementary and in some ways unique to what other windows into the cell, like genomics, like metabolite profiling, other approaches provide. So the solution is not any one of these techniques, but it is in the integration of these methods and understanding what the information is telling us. Those are the things that I want the audience to come away with. And I will try to convey that history and that excitement primarily through application examples. I'll give a little bit of the history to make sure they're aware of this wasn't developed yesterday. Mm-hmm. But I'll jump quite rapidly into where does this all fit today? How is it being applied to solve, you know, problems in basic biology, in clinical medicine, and in chemical biology?
I imagine that quite useful in the things that you're doing and your colleagues, your many colleagues are working with there, has got to have something to do with nanotechnology, because it has always been thought that if you can drill down to the atomic level and the molecular level, that you can rearrange some of these diseases to where they're really kind of harmless. I wonder if maybe you'd put on the meditation cap for just a minute, kind of look down the future 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, I don't know, how long. Is there going to be a time when we're going to be able to manipulate the diseases so that they're not diseases any longer, and be able to protect people from those sorts of things that might even include aging?
Yeah. So, you know, there's certainly hope for, if not outright cures, certainly much better therapeutic treatments for a wide range of diseases. So we're not, you know, horribly far off. But in order to do that, it takes a lot more material, it takes a lot more labor at this point in time. So looking 10 years out, as you've asked me to do, what do I see? I see, you know, the kind of technologies that we're applying today in a somewhat laborious and quite time-consuming fashion being greatly reduced being greatly increased in terms of the throughput.
Mm-hmm.
And also increased in terms of the information content in those experiments. So parallel to what's happened in genomics, but not at the same, incredible increase in capacity. But I do see this all improving. And furthermore, I think the technology, as it already has, you know, my lab will begin to move out into laboratories that aren't necessarily so specialized.
Mm-hmm.
So my lab continually kind of cuts back on the projects that, well, they were challenging yesterday, but today they're really routine. And other people who have access to those instruments with a little bit of training should be able to do that work on their own. So I try to focus my group on really the most difficult problems at the cutting edge, where we think that there is not just application today, but extensive application and importance tomorrow. So that's how I see the future. You asked a little bit about nanotechnologies.
Mm-hmm.
We're not quite at the nanoscale yet in proteomics, although I should be careful about that. One of my collaborators and colleagues, Sangeeta Bhatia from MIT, is actually using nanoparticles as a way of enriching for populations of peptides in urine.
Okay.
So there is some beginning application of nanotechnologies in proteomics, but certainly microfluidics and smaller scale smaller scale applications are being heavily investigated. And the reason for this is a lot of our high sample requirements come from losses on surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
So the smaller we can make things, the less material will ultimately get lost. Therefore, our sensitivity goes up. These things can be made very small, and by decreasing the size, the speed of the processes that are being undergone on these chips, like digestion, for example, with an enzyme,
mm-hmm.
or other chemical manipulations, can be made to go much faster. Separations can be sped up. So I think all of those kinds of technological advances are going to directly impact on both today and tomorrow in proteomics. Automation is incredibly important, and I will touch on automation in my talk, because the instruments are expensive. The experts that run them also are expensive, appropriately so, and therefore we can't simply scale people and instruments to tackle the number of projects that we have. In order to do that, we have resorted to leveraging automation, particularly liquid handling automation, to do a variety of manipulations on a scale that a human technician, a scientist in the lab, could potentially do, but they probably would burn out after one or two cycles of that. Whereas
mm-hmm.
the robots don't.
Yeah.
So we're trying to leverage that in order to increase our capacity as well.
All right. Steve Carr, director of proteomics at the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard, featured speaker, PitCon. Registration, incidentally, for PitCon is now open. You can register now at pitcon.org. It's PITTCON.org. Going to be held in 2014 in March. March 2 through the 6th, at the McCormick Place in Chicago. And we'll see Steve Carr there. Thanks, Steve, so much for being with us. You've been just a wonderful, wonderful guest.
Thank you very much, Colonel, for the opportunity.
Our next guest is Dr. Christine Lee. She's with the NASA Applied Sciences Program. We talked to Christine on Tuesday, the first day of the government shutdown, and we had to speak to her on Skype because that's all she had at her house. So please forgive that the sound quality is just a little thin. You're talking to me on Skype from your home in Foggy Bottom because certain members of government don't realize they were elected to government to work in government and decide instead to shut it down.
They should have told us when we elected them if they didn't want the work.
Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I understand that you're working, you're in NASA in the Applied Science Program, and you're working closely with program managers in the Water Resources Application area. Now, of course, we know that NASA sends us back these stunning pictures of Earth and what's going on with the glaciers and the water and that sort of thing. But what's the capacity, and I want to talk to you more about that, but what's a capacity building program?
The capacity building program is another program that's within the Applied Sciences Program at NASA in the Earth Science Division. So within the Applied Sciences Program, there are four application areas. You've mentioned one, which is the Water Resources Application area. And then the Capacity Building Program focuses on building capacity to use NASA Earth observations and tools to improve resources management. So not only does the Capacity Building Program help build applications, but it also is considering the ability, the capacity to use those applications as well.
All right, so NASA's doing a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, we think of all the moonshots and the other stuff that's going on and the Mars exploration and things, but we don't think about all the stuff that you're doing right here on Earth, and that's mainly what you're concerned with at NASA, I think. Is that right?
That is correct. So, like you mentioned, most of what NASA is well known for is all of the exploration that we do of the planet. But we also study our most important planet here on Earth using our set of constellation satellites, which are constantly collecting different types of climate data, weather data, land surface information. And we can better maximize the benefit of all of this data and information if we can build applications to use that data more effectively. So the capacity building program is really about not just using developing models based on those data, but it's also about helping others learn how to interpret that information and become more familiar with the idea of using satellite data to inform decisions.
Well, of course, right now there's all this talk that it isn't going to be long before the Arctic opens up and there's going to be just a sea passage right on through the top of the world. Do you hold with that?
Well, that's actually, we do have, within the Earth Science Division, we also have the Research and Analysis Program. I would defer to speaking with some of those climate scientists if you want that kind of perspective on that recent IPCC report that I believe you're referring to.
What I'm really interested is you're going to be a guest speaker at the Global Humanitarian Technology Conference coming up here shortly on the October 20th through the 23rd. And I've been dying to get a hold of you. I know you've just been as busy as a one-armed paper hanger, and it's not been easy to get through to you, but I finally got you on the phone. So can you give us kind of a preview of the things you're going to talk about at the Global Humanitarian Technology Conference in San Jose?
Sure. We submitted a paper that was examining a cross-section of the Applied Sciences Program that dealt with primarily water issues. And what we wanted to do was we hope to reveal some of the different ways that NASA and the Applied Sciences Program is using Earth observations to benefit society. So, again, a lot of what people know NASA for is how we study other planets, as well as a lot of the climate science advances that we support or that NASA scientists participate in. But what Applied Sciences Program is focused on is building tools to help process and visualize satellite information to help support natural resources management, and using those applications to build upon the benefit to society in a more direct way. So that can consist of building tools, it can consist of developing workforce, and it can also consist of training potential partners or end users to becoming more familiar with how satellite data can be integrated into their decision processes. So we hope that some of this exposure at the Global Humanitarian Technology Conference can stimulate new ideas and new ways in which satellite data can be tailored to helping decision makers and addressing their needs. And again, we focused on water challenges, so flood prediction, drought monitoring, and some other areas as well.
Are you going to have any stunning revelations that you're going to be able to tell people about at the conference?
Well, again, what the primary objective of putting together this paper was to show that NASA really does want to see how its satellite data and the investments that taxpayers make in putting up these satellites can really benefit society. So, on top of all the great climate science research and understanding Earth as a system, we're trying to show that NASA also cares about directly benefiting society and maximizing the benefits of society through the satellite data. So I don't know if we can consider it a major revelation, but we hope to show that we do care.
Okay, and you're going to collect information, too, because I'm sure you're going to be rubbing shoulders with a lot of the attendees who are going to say, gee, there's this problem and that problem, we see this over here and that there. So that could be probably pretty helpful for you. At the end of your presentation, though, is there one specific thing that you hope that they will take away? Is there one big message you want to drive home about the NASA or your work or something else that you really want to get across?
Yeah, and that's really just that NASA Earth observation data, or one of the points that we would like to make, is that NASA Earth observation data is actually free and accessible. And we hope that by talking more about all of the different types of applications that we're helping build and all of the people that we are working with to build these applications, that we can encourage others to take advantage of this huge and rich data set and stimulate others to do the same, whether it's working with us directly in the Applied Sciences Program or reaching out to us so that we can provide trainings or webinars, or that maybe others can start undertaking application development on their own if they are so inspired to do so.
All right. Lots of fun, fascinating stuff, and it's good to know the things that that we're getting from the NASA program and how really wide and useful it can be, not just a moonshot here or there or putting up a satellite or a trip to Mars, but, as you say, studying the most important planet that we know of, and that's our very, very own planet. Now, I gotta ask you, they shut the government down today. We have no idea how long it's going to be. Some people say, well, it's going to be very short-lived. It's going to just last certainly for a few days just to make a point, but we're not really sure. What are you going to do? You're not just going to hang around the house there in Foggy Bottom, are you?
Well, luckily, I'm a AAAS, the Association for the Advancement of Science, American Association for the Advancement of Science, Science and Technology Policy Fellow, which means that I get the benefit of both experiencing the shutdown in terms of not being able to go physically to the NASA building to do work, but I also and able to telework to some degree, since my status is, it's between, it's not exactly a federal employee, but I am a policy fellow. So I still get to be happily productive from the vantage point of my home, but also get to be in D.C. and it's very interesting, but I can also be very frustrating time for others.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, I'm glad you've got a lot of things to keep you busy. I know you're a busy, very busy woman. We've been trying for weeks to get you on the program, and it has been next to impossible. But I'm so grateful that you finally took a little time to join us here. Could you maybe put on the meditation cap for a minute? Kind of look down the road with the work that you're doing, maybe 5 years or 10 years. See if you can't give us some sort of a vision for the future. Where do you see things going? Do you have a futuristic vision for us?
Well, do you mean for the NASA Applied Sciences Program?
Well, or the Washington Redskins winning the World Series or something like that, or the Super Bowl or something like that. I don't know, some future prediction. And yeah, if you can give us something concerning what you're doing with NASA, that would be really cool.
Well, I do see the NASA Applied Sciences Program being able to really demonstrate NASA's relevance to society because, everywhere I go, people are excited to hear that I work for NASA. But then they also ask me questions like, how are you guys still open? Didn't the shuttle program shut down? And what I want to be able to tell them is, no, we are still here. We're still very active and we're still very vibrant. But not just in terms of research and technology, but in terms of really finding a way to benefit society through applications development and capacity building.
All right, how about a word of wisdom? I mean, you've been mentored and probably have some wisdom that was passed on to you while you're coming up to your career. You're an accomplished doctor. You are with the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and you probably mentor other people. What little word of wisdom could you leave us with today?
Well, I think one of the most important lessons that I've learned so far anyway, is that we should always try and be open to new opportunities, but that you should also think about these opportunities in the context of what you hope to contribute to those that you're working with when you're pursuing that new opportunity, as well as how you hope this opportunity will help you grow as a person. And I really think that having that sort of plan that is also flexible and fluid in mind can really help you make the most out of that opportunity.
All right, Dr. Christine Lee, Science and Technology Policy Fellow for the NASA Applied Sciences Program and speaker and presenter at the Global Humanitarian Technology Conference, October 20th through the 23rd at the San Jose Airport Garden Hotel in Silicon Valley in California. You're so generous with your time. Thank you so much. I'm so glad we finally had an opportunity to get acquainted with you, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the conference.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate speaking with you.
And it's nice to know that since you've got the day off because the government shut down, that you're not just going to go out and do some shopping, but you have some other real work to do.
Yes, we do.
And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Mark Cuban shared a word of wisdom. Ideas are a commodity. If all you have is an idea, then get the heck out. What we want are people who are action-driven. We want people who can execute. Everyone has an idea. Execution, that's the difference. My name is Jeremy Vickers. I'm the Managing Director of Innovation here at the Dallas Regional Chamber.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.